It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 222, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, can they see you? AI and screenshots, search engine agendas.
Hey, Gary, howdy from another damp Seattle day.
Ah, well, it's nice here in Colorado as usual. So spring is well underway, which is great.
Yeah, it's funny. We've had people come up here and say, "Oh my God, it's cold. This feels like winter." Says, no. This is spring. This is Seattle. Y'all ain't from around here, are you?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So last week we talked some about AI. In fact, I think the whole episode was AI. Yeah. And one of the things we talked about was the new Microsoft Copilot Plus branded PCs. And the fact that they're throwing, more neural processors in them and a bunch of other stuff. One of the features that was announced that, honestly, I should have reacted to a little bit more strongly is something they're calling recall. Mm-hmm. I'm tempted to call it total recall just because. But essentially what it boils down to, if I read their description of it, and they actually have a how-to with the requirements and all that kind of stuff, which we'll link to, of course, in the show notes. They're basically taking a screenshot of your machine every 5 seconds when things are changing. Mm. And will allow you to then apparently query based on, what was I doing a few minutes ago? What page was that? Help me remember what I'm not remembering kind of stuff. Being able to basically go back and go back to whatever you were working on 30 minutes ago based on a plain English query. Now, I'll admit it's wonderful for people who, like me, who have trouble remembering what we were doing 5 minutes ago, much less 30 minutes ago. But it's one of those things that's either or, and it's a very simple proposition. If you trust Microsoft, it's actually a pretty cool feature. Mm. I've definitely run into situations where I would love to be able to remember something specific about something that I did say earlier that day or in the morning or even yesterday, that kind of stuff. But if you're even just a little suspicious of Microsoft, much less some of the more vocal opponents of Microsoft and proponents of privacy, this is like a huge, huge possible hole that we could be diving into, where I've said for a long time that if you don't trust Microsoft, why are you using Windows? Because they have access to everything you're doing, right?
Yeah, they operate. It's the operating system.
It's the operating system. It can see and do everything because it has to. And I usually respond that way because people are upset about they're absolutely convinced that the documents are being, when they upload them to OneDrive, that they're being scanned by Microsoft or something like that. You don't have to upload them to Microsoft for Microsoft to have the ability to do that. And this just seems like an extremely more blatant way of doing this is, yes, we can see everything you're doing on your machine, and we're going to use that to help you remember. I just have visions of the privacy proponents just going nuts.
Sure.
I'm hoping that someone will, once this rolls out and they've got a PC using it, throw something like Wireshark on the network connection and just monitor the traffic that's going back and forth between the PC and Microsoft. It's possible, of course, that it will be encrypted, so you won't actually be able to see the data going back and forth. But it seems like the volume of data would change dramatically based on whether or not you've got this feature turned on or not, and if it's being transmitted back to Microsoft servers. Of course, they claim it's not. They claim it's all on your hardware.
Right.
They save it all on your PC. But of course, the skeptics among us will either not believe that, or they will simply say, well, yeah, that's true today. Mm-hmm. What's to prevent it from changing in the future? So anyway, I just thought it was something that was warranted at least some acknowledgement and just sort of a heads up for controversies in the future, because I think this one will end up being a fairly controversial feature.
It's fairly common on the Mac side of things, too, for every once in a while, somebody to discover, like it's a big mystery, something called log files.
Yes.
And you know, post something to Reddit like, did you know your Mac keeps track of all of the files you've opened? Like, yes, it's called a log file. It keeps track of lots of things going on your Mac. And yes, your Mac is keeping track of what you do on your Mac, because that's what a log file does. And then, of course, people have to jump in and point out there's a big difference between your Mac having this log and this being sent somewhere.
Right.
And then, of course, features like this that will help you. Matter of fact, I did a video for my patrons on the new Mac Chat GPT app. And one of
did
the
you
things...
get it?
Yeah, I got it. I've been using
it. Yeah, great.
And one of the things about it is that you can take a screenshot, and it has some good screenshot capabilities. You can say, you know, in the middle of writing, you can just say, oh, yeah, screenshot, and you could take the whole screen. You could take just a window, for instance. So if there's just like you're looking at an article on the web, you could just say just the Safari window, and it sends it as a, you know, just like you would send a photo. So you could ask about it. And I even demonstrate like taking a spread, you know, having a spreadsheet open in a window and sending a screenshot to it and asking it some complex information about the spreadsheet that's shown. Mm-hmm. So I theorize that it's like, well, it's kind of annoying to have to do that. Like I would, especially if you're using voice mode where you're just talking and you just want to be able to say, is the article I'm reading now, you know, does it include information about, you know, whatever? And you know, you have to stop and then actually say, no, send a screenshot of this or upload this file. It would be nice to actually just ask it, is the spreadsheet table I'm looking at now, are there any irregularities? Is the image that I'm editing right now, you know, is it, what else can I do to it? Give me some suggestions. You know, no, you have to stop and do it. And I thought it'd be great if it was actually like looking at your screen and could do this, either the screenshots capability or just always kind of have that on hand. So yeah, and I'm sure if you could do that, some people would complain and say, well, what if, and all of that. I still get people saying, like this week, I got somebody making a comment that they don't use iCloud photos because they don't want Apple to have their photos. And I have to point out again that it's end-to-end encrypted. They don't have your photos. They have a bunch of random bits that aren't your photos. But so, you know, there's a lot of that stuff. Now, it's interesting they're doing screenshots because that's a lot of data, like you said.
Yes.
But it's AI. So what if, instead of taking a screenshot, it actually looked at the screen and described it to itself and saved that bit of text? That wouldn't cover everything. Obviously, it's like you're compressing the data. You're creating a summary. But a lot of the things we do, like you close up a browser tab that was on a web page and you're like, oh, where was I? What was that? What was I just reading? Or what was I reading an hour ago? What was that article about Alaska I was reading an hour ago? But if it just every couple minutes described to itself and saved as text what was on the screen, it might be able to go back and say, oh, you know, 45 minutes ago, you had on your screen an article that fit that description. Here's the URL. That could be kind of interesting. You know, the little AI summary, like we do an AI summary here in on Zoom of while we're doing our podcast. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to have an AI summary that's you and what you're up to. It could even help you undo things or like, oh, what was in that paragraph I deleted half hour ago?
Yeah.
And it could say, oh, you did delete a big paragraph that was, you know, and how AI talks. That it was pretty interesting. I've saved it for you. That kind of thing.
In the voice of Scarlett Johansson, not.
Yes. Exactly. And, you know, I was thinking, I know other voice actors now have, you know, want legislation and want to be able to protect their voices and stuff.
Yes, yes.
Against that. We're adding things to our agenda here. We're not even, because we talked about the Mac app and now we're talking about this. I found it interesting and I haven't found an article to talk about this yet. Supposedly that Sky voice from OpenAI,
right,
they claim was another actor.
Yes.
They brought in. to record their voice. And now other voice actors are saying, I want to protect it so a voice similar to mine can't be used. But here's the thing. Think about that other actor. That's her voice.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to enter into a contract with OpenAI and get paid to voice, you know, read a bunch of stuff and then allow them to use her voice and get compensated for that. But she's not allowed to do that because her voice sounds too much like Scarlett Johansson's now, apparently.
Yep.
And so what's the deal there? It's like, if your voice sounds too similar to somebody else that's more famous than you, then, well, tough. Change
somebody
your voice.
Somebody else that has bigger lawyers than you do. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing.
Very
anyway.
Strange. Yep.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember from several years ago is that, names on the tip of my tongue, of course, but the voice of Darth Vader, James Earl Jones, he actually did license his voice to, I'm not sure which entity, probably Lucasfilm or something like that.
Yep.
So that even if, you know, past, actually, I don't think he's doing the voice acting anymore, but they can use his voice as they see fit to do Darth Vader in the future if they want to, which I think is a very appropriate and interesting way. I'm assuming his estate or he for now, but eventually his estate would get paid for that. And I'm assuming that there is some, you know, restriction on exactly how it could be used. But that seems like a good model if the voice actors are willing to you know, enter into that. If they're not, then yeah, you know, their voices theoretically should be off limits. But right now, I don't think they are.
Yeah, it's confusing. Because it's, I don't know. I mean, if somebody else sounded a lot like James Earl Jones and was hired to do a commercial and then James Earl Jones sued that company saying, you can't use my voice. And they say, we're using, you know, Robert Jones's voice. It's some other guy. Here he is. You could talk to him. He does sound like you. That's true. But it is his voice and he has the right to use his voice for things.
I think one of the things these companies are going to have to start doing is basically keeping an audit trail. And by that, I mean, you know, when the voice actor is doing their work, like this person who did Sky, for some reason, they don't want to identify her, which, of course, makes everybody suspect them even more.
Yeah.
But to the extent that they could, even if they just had like some video of her recording the voice that would then become Sky, that's kind of like the audit trail that says, no, it sounds like her, but it's not her. This is this other person who offered us her voice. So.
Yeah, that would make sense. And maybe they didn't have that in their contract. And now they realize they have to. It's like, if you want to get paid for us to record your voice and use it, then one of the things we're going to do is we're going to video you in during the entire session.
Right.
And we have the right to also identify you and say, this is the person we used.
Right.
And they gave us the right to use it. I mean, that's probably the solution there. But then the actual voice actors, Scarlett Johansson's and James Earl Jones's, they're going to have to go and meet in the middle and say, yeah, you know, my voice isn't unique. It is me, but there's going to be other people that are very close.
Right.
So anyway.
For some reason, that reminds me, there's a singer on TikTok, I think, is where I saw her. Who is an absolute dead-on clone of Karen Carpenter. I mean, if your eyes were closed, you thought she would be the one singing. So that, again, that kind of stuff is interesting because what would the estate of Karen Carpenter do? Anyway, so on to other things. Let's not talk about AI for a minute.
Okay.
Let's talk instead about search. Oh, wait, we have to talk. So last week, maybe it was the week before, I released an article basically that described why I've stopped using Google search. I have essentially a few criteria. One is it's loaded with ads. Two is the AI, while interesting, it's not really what I want. I mean, I want the original description, you know, the 10 blue links. I want links to where I need to find the information I'm looking for.
Right.
And then, of course, the other thing is that my sense is that the actual search results, if we set aside the ads, if we set aside the AI, the actual search results have been declining in quality over the years. So I talked about some of the alternatives, which include things like DuckDuckGo, Bing, which I try to avoid more on principle, just because Microsoft keeps ramming it down my throat. And therefore, I want to not use it. and, you know, DuckDuckGo. And then I ran into Kaji, which is a paid search engine. You pay, I think it's like $5 a month. And it gives you a completely clean, and I've been playing with that for, well, actually, since I wrote the article, actually a little bit before. And it's actually become my preferred search engine just because it's super clean. I get the results I want, you know, the usual stuff. So as it turns out, that article and the video that go with it surprised the heck out of me by how controversial my approach was. And we just had responses that were all over the map.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. You know, hey, great. I'm getting lots of clicks, you know, I'm getting lots of, of YouTube views, but I just found it so interesting. There's like over 1200 comments on the article when I looked at it a few days ago. And like I said, they're all over the map. So I wanted to, you know, kind of talk about a couple of things, and we could talk about some of the more controversial issues. I want to be clear up front. One of the things that several people were saying is that they said that this was an ad for Kaji. In no way was it anything close to an ad for Kaji. I wasn't even ready to recommend Kaji. I was just sort of promoting it or displaying it as an example. An unusual example, actually, because a paid search engine is very unusual. It's the only one I know of. So I just wanted to explore it as an alternative. And certainly nobody's given me any money to do that.
Yeah.
One of the other responses that we get a lot is, well, why aren't you using an ad blocker?
Yep.
And I have two answers for that. One is I do. On my personal browser, I definitely have an ad blocker running. The internet is almost too painful now without one. But A, not everybody does. And B, the ad blockers don't always block the ads. I mean, that's just sort of the usual cat and mouse, whack-a-mole type game that advertisers and ad blockers have been playing since the dawn of ad blockers. So it's not something I think it's safe to assume that people necessarily have installed. Do you have an ad blocker installed?
No, I do not, actually. I try to stick with the whole, you know, I kind of preach that ad blockers hurt creators.
Yep.
I don't argue that there are ads. There are ads I wouldn't mind blocking and situations where I wouldn't mind seeing the ads blocked.
Right.
However, I don't see a good way to like only let the good ads or the ads on the good sites come through. So instead, I go with the strategy of if a site is too painful because of the ads, I either look for an alternative. If it's, you know, it's sort of like self-fulfilling kind of thing. I mean, if it's, well, this is the only site that has this information that good, so I'll put up with the bad ads. Well, then it's not too painful. It's like, you know, there's that line there. So yeah, there are news, believe me, there are especially local news sources that I know it's like, no, I'm not even going to go to that article because that site is too painful. If I can't find it elsewhere, maybe I will, because it's like, well, I have no choice, but it's, yeah, I basically say, no, it's, I'd rather put up with like being frustrated a little bit by a site having way too many ads, but I still know I'm helping the creators of the different sites and different, like even things like YouTube channels and stuff that I'm going to.
I absolutely went with your stand, almost identical, for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the phrase that I started using on the Google search article was inshittification by Cory Doctorow. And it's basically that advertising in general is slowly getting worse and worse and more intrusive. And to be honest, I know right now that my site is in that situation. I have plans to deal with it, but it's unfortunate. Like you say, you know, advertising is what keeps a lot of content creators, especially smaller ones, running. But for me, it just reached a threshold where, you know, I needed to get stuff done. What I did on YouTube is I actually pay for YouTube Premium.
Yes, I do that
I don't
as well.
I don't see any ads on YouTube. And it, too, was getting fairly painful. But at least there's this wonderful opt-out mechanism that says, hey, just give us the money we would have made from you and we won't show you any ads. And that's great. But the real issue is that when there are ads in the Google search results, another response I got, of course, was, well, they're clearly marked as ads. No, they're not. That's what's really frustrating is that, you know, many people report to me that they didn't realize what they were clicking on was an ad, even though it's got the little ad or sponsored or whatever, usually in very small type. And people are focused on the title, on the ad, on the content of the ad, or you know what they think is a search result. So the short answer there is that no, they are not clearly marked as ads. And we have seen that change over the years. In the past, the ads were in a special place off to the side, and there was a big box or a blue line or whatever that clearly marked them as ads. And it's obvious that Google and perhaps other providers as well are saying that, you know what, if we make this a little bit more hidden, people will click on the ad instead of the search result they were looking for. I find that very, very disingenuous. I find that very misleading. So that, again, is another reason of the way that I, or the reason that I'm stepping away or have basically stepped away from Google results. Yeah. AI results.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. I actually don't mind them. I think they're kind of interesting at times, but I'm looking at them from a, I don't know, an enthusiast's point of view. I'm trying to see how it's going rather than relying on them for answers. And what surprised me about the responses that I got on the article was the number of people that absolutely, positively hated AI in all of its forms. And this was just another form of AI that they didn't want to be exposed to. They either didn't trust it, or they felt it was, you know, a big plagiarism machine, or any number of other objections to AI in the search results. It is fairly interesting. Like I said, the AI, from a content perspective, the AI is kind of sort of making a problem we've been dealing with already worse, and that is that what Google used to refer to as zero-click results, right? You get the answer on the search page, so you don't have to click through to the site. That's, I suppose, good for the person searching, but it's horrible for the people that are actually producing the content that gave them that answer in the first place. So it's with mixed emotions that I kind of sort of say, okay, I understand it, but my surprise was just at the number of people that are so morally objected, objection to AI.
Yeah, I'm not seeing as much of that with my audience. I'm actually very surprised because I've learned to expect, you know, such things, right, pushback and all that. And I haven't seen much pushback. Definitely seeing pushback in the larger population, like in the some of the comments to your video, and in general, like on Reddit and stuff like that. But maybe it's because in my audience, I attract more, not so much Mac users, but also enthusiasts, right? So they end up being excited about things like AI. Not saying they're all like, yeah, AI is just going to be great and it'll solve all our problems. Kind of a cautious optimism, not a pessimistic view at all. So, but yeah, no, there's definitely going to be, and I think it's going to get bigger too. I think as AI appears more and more in places where we're not asking for it, like search, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to go to ChatGPT, go to an AI and ask an AI a question.
Right.
But it's another thing, just do a Google search for a coffee maker like you did, you know, and then maybe get an AI result at the top and be like, I wasn't asking you. I just wanted some web pages.
Honestly, the answer, the AI answer that would have impressed the pants off me is, oh, I see you're looking for coffee makers.
Yeah.
Here are the top 10 as recommended by Consumer Reports. And here's the top 10 recommended by such and such, because ultimately that's the kind of stuff it seems like I'd be looking for.
Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned was ChatGPT. I didn't throw this in the notes, but I thought about it earlier today. And that is, a number of responses said that, you know, I'm not even using Google anymore or Bing or any of those others.
Yeah.
I'm just asking ChatGPT. Yeah. And that scares me. And the reason it scares me is not because I think it's necessarily a bad thing, but ChatGPT is still frequently, confidently wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're using ChatGPT as your search engine, clearly you're kind of missing that little aspect of artificial intelligence right now, is that it is not. It's not right often. And that's kind of scary.
I think sometimes, because I've used it, but you know, there's a certain case. And the case is, if I'm trying to figure out how to do something, I am looking for a solution and it's easily verifiable.
Right.
Like, what is that? What is the terminal command that will do this? Right. And if I go to chat, I could go and look at a ton of different, articles at coding sites and Reddit and all that. And there'll be a bunch of conflicting information. But if I ask ChatGPT and it gives me an answer, the first thing I do is does it work? Yep, it works. Or no, that doesn't work. So when I know there's a verifiable answer to it, that I don't see the harm. And there's a lot of questions
right
that have that kind of verifiable answer thing.
It's funny because I did that for the first time just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I was writing a bash script, which is not something I do very often, but it's actually a script that runs every night on one of my Linux boxes.
Yeah.
And I wanted a for loop based on the number of files in a folder. And then I wanted to execute a command on each one of those files individually. I don't know how to do that in bash. I can figure it out, I'm sure. But I asked ChatGPT to do it. And it pooped out actually two variations of code for me. And I copy pasted the first one, tailored it to my needs, and that was done. I mean,
yeah, you could test it and you could see it worked.
Yep.
Done.
It was awesome. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, is that very quietly, Google introduced a new parameter to their search. And in fact, if you do a Google search, there's that line that says, okay, all the results, then there's images or news or whatever. There's an option they added called web, which means that the only search results you get are links to other sites on the web, kind of like the search engine used to work.
Yeah.
And how a lot of people want the search engine to work. So that's great. Somebody actually put together a short website, udm14.com, because that's the actual name of the parameter, I guess, which will, it looks like a search engine. You enter your search term and it sends you to Google with that parameter automatically turned on. And the parameter is sticky so that if you do further searches from that one instance in Google, all you're going to get are web results. And so that's something else that I think, like I said, I think Google is sensitive to the issue, which is why they probably slid this in. I'm hoping they're paying attention to how many people are using it, because it might give them some very interesting information about whether, how far they should go with this answer on the page and other stuff.
Well, that's a fascinating subject right there, is why does it exist and is it an experiment?
Yep.
Because, like you mentioned earlier about the ad blockers. There's just going to be a lot of people that just don't use ad blockers, right? And there's all this data and social science about the fact that no matter how, people go out and say, yeah, you should definitely use an ad blocker, there's just going to be a huge percentage that just don't do it. Same thing here. It's like, here's just a really obvious thing you could do to improve your Google searches. So what percentage of the searches at Google will actually end up using this? There's some sort of weird number, and there's probably a whole algorithm to it. It's going to get, is it 2%? Is it 10%? It's probably somewhere around 5%. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Google wants to know. I'm sure if Google doesn't want to know, there's some data scientist at Google right now that is like, this is like, they really want to know. They're charting this every week, and they're trying to see if the curve is actually going to follow any, like, match any other similar things to it. And I'm sure they are looking and seeing, like, maybe there might even be a way mathematically to judge whether or not, does it break out of it? Like, something like this, adding a parameter to alter web search to get better results. It should go up to 5% of the users and then kind of level off there. And if it actually breaks out of that curve. There's probably, I bet you the Google scientist even has a name for the curve. It's the something curve, right? If it breaks out of that curve and goes above 5% and starts going up, then they know they've hit on something and they need to make a change.
Right.
And if it follows that curve, then they know they're fine
right.
with how they're doing everything. And they could leave this little UDM14 thing in there just to appease, because it probably helps. It quiets people down, right?
Oh, yeah.
The most
of course.
vocal voices against this
yep.
will now be appeased by the fact that they don't have to deal with it.
Right.
No need to complain anymore. I'll just use this, let all the suckers go and use the regular Google search. And then Google's like, oh, great. These people weren't going to click on ads anyway. Now they won't complain. The search engine actually runs faster because it's doing less with those people. And we have optimized our revenue because we put that parameter in there.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Yeah, they're PhD people at Google.
Of
that
course.
are looking at this like that.
And I think the same model is very, very true for all the advertising networks as well. They basically are constantly testing how much they can get away with,
yeah.
right? You know, if all of a sudden having, you know, half a dozen ads on a page reduces the ad interaction or whatever it is they're measuring, then they know maybe they need to dial it back. On the other hand, if people are tolerating a dozen ads on the page and without really affecting anything, then full steam ahead. Let the enshittification continue. So one of the other aspects that I don't know, it shouldn't have surprised me, but it did. Maybe it disappointed me more than it surprised me. There were a lot of folks who either explicitly mentioned or just included as a kind of a throwaway comment that ultimately indicated they believe that Google has an editorial agenda and actively filters out search results that it, quote unquote, doesn't like.
Yeah.
And I personally, I suspect that there is such an algorithm because there are things that they shouldn't return, you know, things like porn sites or whatever. So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of to what degree and, of course, in what direction. If anything, I think most people who were complaining consider Google to perhaps have a more liberal bias politically, and I suspect that that's where a lot of this discussion is coming from. I don't know. This is a hard one. This is a hard one to really get my brain around because it boils down to what do we believe is true?
Yeah.
What does Google as an organization have the right to do? And how transparent should they be about doing it? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the social media algorithms we talk about to some extent also apply to search because, you know, like as an example of a social media algorithm, you could, you know, if you look at my TikTok, which is a heavily algorithmed feed, you would think that TikTok is about scientists and stand-up comedians and like indie music bands, you know, trying out their original songs, you know, and a few other weird things like Doctor Who and Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. You would think it's that. But if you looked at somebody else's TikTok feed, you would think about it was about cats and funny little dances and stuff.
Orgies.
It's yeah, exactly. So it's heavily algorithmed to show me things that I'll be interested in to keep me coming back to the platform. The company has no interest, and I have no interest in seeing videos that I don't want to see, right? So it kind of makes sense. If we were at cross purposes, it wouldn't work. If the company wanted to show me things I don't want to see, I would no longer use the platform. So that wouldn't work. I think search engines do kind of a similar thing. I think I'm pretty sure that, you know, they'll use things like your location, for instance, to show you local results. We know that. Also, if you've searched for something and it knows you're interested in a particular kind of thing, it would try to tailor your results to you to what it knows about you to try to make it more relevant to you, because it wants you, they want you to keep using the search engine. Search engines are kind of weird because platforms like YouTube and TikTok, they try to keep you on the platform. The search engine eventually has to let go of you. It's the whole point is right. Like, you know, but it wants to let go of you, but encourage you to come back the next time you need to search for something. So it's kind of a weird way to do it, but I'm sure that if you search for and click on certain news sources, certain news stories, and then if you did kind of a neutral search, your search would be different than if somebody that was in the opposite, you know, political
right.
part of the spectrum, because it would learn a little bit about you and show you those kinds of things. One of the commenters on your video had an interesting thing, and they complained specifically about why does a search for Nike not bring up a search of the Greek, you know, results with the Greek god Nike, but it brings up sneaker results. And this is an interesting thing to ask, because first of all, it would be so bad for a search engine to get a request for Nike and then show you Greek god stuff, right? Greek mythology stuff.
Exclusively, because yeah.
It's
sure.
probably not what you're looking for, right? It's right. Almost 99% of the time you're looking for sneakers, right? So it'd be really weird, and you would think, well, this is a bad search engine if it was all mythology that you got as a result, and you had to go and say, no, I mean Nike sneakers. Oh, okay. And obviously there has to be some responsibility set on you to realize that a search for Nike is going to come up with sneakers. If you say Nike Greek mythology, then it's going to shouldn't give you any sneakers, right? It should give you all mythology. So, The thinking is that what if you searched, you were just constantly searching for things having to do with mythology, because obviously that was your area of study or expertise, and that's right. All you're doing is mythology all day long, searching Google for things having to do with it, and then you search for Nike one day. Would then you get maybe some results that would be mythology, or would you still get all sneakers?
Right.
No, that would be the test there. And what would you want it to do? Do you want it to go and say, nope, sneakers, it's all sneakers? And you say, no, why, you stupid search engine, you should know I search for mythology. Why are you showing me sneakers? But then you're just asking for exactly what you're arguing against, that it's taking, you know, taking care to kind of track what you're doing and giving you an agenda saying, hey, your agenda is you want to read about mythology. So I'm going to give you these
results. I suspect that there's no right answer down this path.
Yeah.
Because some people don't want their search results tailored to them.
Yeah.
They think it's creepy. It's a form of tracking. It's some kind of invasion of privacy that Google knows that they're that interested in mythology. So they'd rather, you know, have to deal with, they would prefer that the search engine return the same results for everybody. And which itself by itself is not practical, because even local stuff makes a difference. But on the other hand, I could absolutely see people who would truly appreciate the efficiency of having Google tailor its results based on what it's learned about your interests. There's a Greek mythologist somewhere who's just pleased as punch that all he gets are Greek mythology results.
Right. But then the thing is that, you know, you tie that back into the do search engines have an agenda?
Right.
And the idea being that if, you know, I could definitely go to TikTok and only click on, say, liberal political things.
Right.
Or I could go to TikTok and only click on conservative political things. And after a few days of doing that, if I were to just watch TikTok,
yep.
I would think that there's an agenda. And the question is, did I give it that agenda through the algorithm? Is it somehow being, like, you know, put there? And then, of course, there's the unknowing, you know, the example being a big example I see a lot is teenage boys go to TikTok for the first time. And perhaps what they like is playing Counter-Strike. So they're shown a bunch of stuff and they see a video of Counter-Strike. Great. Let me watch that whole thing. And they and it notices that. So it shows them another video of Counter-Strike and another video. And pretty soon it gets the idea that they like Counter-Strike. Not just that, but that they like video games with guns. And, oh, the with guns. Here's a video that has guns. Not Counter-Strike, but maybe you'd like this as well. And so now they see that and they're watching gun videos. Well, you like guns. Maybe you would like paramilitary, you know, junk. And the next thing you know, you're seeing neo-Nazi videos.
Right.
Right. Yep. Yep. Which is, it's just because there were like, oh, there's tangentially related things. And you go over in the Venn diagram three or four, you know, places. And next thing you know, what you're seeing this stuff. And all it's trying to do is show you stuff that it thinks you would like. And it doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know that this is somehow political or whatever, and this isn't, and these are related, but in a really weird way that maybe it shouldn't do it. It's very, it could go in all sorts of different weird ways to make it seem like there's an agenda.
I think that's,
so it's a tough one.
TikTok's a really good example. Because again, much like we talked about earlier, Google, and much like the advertising networks, TikTok is constantly testing.
Yes.
They're testing at the individual level. What you just described is perfect. If you're just clicking on conservative items all day long, then it's going to show you more conservative items, and only potentially conservative items, right? Everything that you would potentially like and continue to watch. If they threw you something of a liberal nature, then you might not watch. You might leave, and they can't have that happen.
Yes.
How much and, that's... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and one problem is, unfortunately, a lot of the metrics don't have a positive or negative value. They just have an amount. For instance, they could see whether you watched something or like how much you watched it. Mm-hmm. But they don't know whether you watched it because you liked it or maybe the opposite.
Yes.
And in politics, it's very tempting when you see somebody trying to talk about something that's the opposite of what you believe,
yep,
or you know what, to kind of you gawk at it, right?
Yep.
And you know, it's different than if you're not interested. If a topic comes up and I'm not interested in that topic, okay, I don't care, go. But if somebody's saying the opposite of what I believe, I'd be like, oh, what? Oh, this person, you know, and now I've just spent 3, 4, 5 seconds. Oh, all of a sudden the algorithm's being like, oh, you're intrigued by this, are you? And sometimes we actually watch all the way through because we want to see what that person's going to say. You disagree with them though, but you still want to see.
But from TikTok's point of view, mm-hmm, it doesn't care.
It's
giving you exactly what you seem to be willing to watch.
Exactly.
And if that's the opposition so that you can complain about them, great. You're going to see a bunch of that. If that's, you know, the stuff you agree with because you agree with, well, then you're going to see all that.
And sometimes it's we'll watch things to complain about or to be appalled by more than when somebody agrees with us.
Yes.
You know, if somebody goes, there's a video saying exactly what you believe in. Yeah. I get it. You know, great. Next. And then somebody saying the opposite. And then you watch the whole thing to see what this person says. And now it's like, oh, you watch this one video for 5 seconds. This video watch for 30 seconds. I'll show you more of this video. And next thing you know, you're saying, hey, TikTok's got an agenda.
Yeah. So the question is for Google, are they doing something similar? And ultimately,
yes,
we know that TikTok works the way it does.
Yes.
In fact, I read somewhere that honestly, watch time is about the only thing they actually pay attention to.
Yeah.
But as for Google, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like I said, they certainly have an agenda in the sense that it's in their best interest to give us the quote unquote best search results. And it's in their best interests to filter out things that are patently inappropriate. But that still boils down to they draw a line somewhere. And how much of the rest of the behavior is based on algorithms is also unclear.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was interesting, a number of people suggested Yandex as a Google alternative. And I took a look at it. I've never used Yandex until last week. I just wanted to see what it was all about. Seems like a reasonable search engine. There were two problems that I have with it. Everybody's complaining about Google having an agenda. Yandex is headquartered in Moscow, and I have a hard time saying that, well, they wouldn't have an agenda. Of course they have an agenda. They have an agenda that's associated with their origin, and potentially they could be under the influence of other factors like the Russian government, much yeah. like people would say Google is under the effect of local corporations or the American government. So it's like, it hurts either way. Which one do you choose? Which one hurts less to you, right? Mm. The somebody suggested that I search Yandex for Pizzagate. On a normal Google search, you'll get the Wikipedia page talking about it and a bunch of news stories, from news sources you'd recognize. The number one result on Yandex was one of the conspiracy sites. And to me, that by itself says something. I'm not sure exactly what it says, because Yandex is certainly showing you a different cross-section, and that can be valuable. But again, I wonder about their agenda and where those agendas come from.
Mm. Yep.
Let's see. So I already talked about people using ChatGPT instead of search.
Yep.
Like I said, it's confidently wrong. And yes, there were definitely a number of people that simply complained, as I did, that the Google search results, everything else being out of the picture, just the search results themselves, mm-hmm. Were getting crappier over time. And that's part of what pushed me over the edge as well. A lot of people blame SEO, search engine optimization, for crappy sites making it onto the search results. What surprised me, of course, was that I was unaware that as many people were aware of search engine optimization as seemed to be, which is kind of interesting. And I mean, SEO in and of itself isn't evil. You and I both do it to some degree. It's part of making sure that what we believe to be valuable content actually shows up when people are searching for things for which we believe we are the correct answer. But it's also true that since Google's initiation, since they started showing search results, they have always been fighting mm-hmm. people misusing, trying to game the algorithm. Whether it was keyword stuffing in the original days, to link farming in recent years, to whatever they're doing these days to game SEO. And yeah, Google is allowing, unfortunately, a number of crappy sites. Of course, a number of people pointed out specifically, not just crappy sites, but crappy sites generated by AI, which is kind of the same problem, but a different problem. The search results are suffering. What I don't know is how or why search results on some of the other search engines aren't similarly affected. I mean, maybe they're just paying attention to a different set of criteria that the SEO folk haven't gotten to yet, because they're currently small targets on the radar, whereas Google is everything. But I suspect that if it is truly SEO manipulation, then if any of the other search engines truly start to gain market share, they'll start to see the same kinds of problems that Google's been fighting now for a couple of decades.
Indeed. I don't have much to add to that, but SEO is, I actually don't, I think both of us maybe paid a lot of attention to SEO in the past.
Years ago.
Because we had content and stuff. Yep. I don't pay much attention to it anymore.
I do a couple of basic things, right? I make sure that, the titles are interesting and relate to the topic.
Yeah.
Some of the mechanics under the hood, just making sure that Google can get a good picture of exactly what this particular article would be about. I will sometimes do true keyword research, which is another aspect of SEO. But that's mostly to see, okay, what are people searching for? Because those are the questions I want to answer. I'm not necessarily trying to game the search results. I just want to see what people are asking. And what's interesting about that is that sometimes it's simply a matter of understanding the words people use. The example that I use frequently is, do people search for sign in or login? And when they search, is it one word or two? Right? Those are four variations of a single concept that I would probably use keyword research, theoretically a piece of SEO, to understand which I would choose to target.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all about YouTube SEO.
Right.
Now, and I think I just ignore Google at this point.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess I do. I have to change my earlier statement and say I do actually spend a decent amount of time on YouTube SEO, just making sure titles are good and stuff like that.
Titles are good, thumbnails are engaging, yada yada, the usual stuff.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So there was just a quick mention here. Last week, we were talking about AI, surprise, surprise. And you brought up an interesting thing is that the one company that you would think would be talking about it has been very quiet was right. Amazon. And I agreed. I was like, yeah, I haven't heard anything. And then the next day, I spotted an article about a rumor, just rumors, that Amazon is indeed working on a large language model update to Alexa that might be out at some point in the near future. The article, for some reason, really hyper-focused on that they may charge $20 a month for it.
Right.
I found that weird. The article was at CNBC, so it's always about money with them, of course. It's a financial. But, you know, I found it weird because it's like the whole point of Alexa always has been to get you to buy more stuff at Amazon. That's why the devices are sold like so cheaply. And it's always suggesting things for you to buy and always it doesn't do that many things very well. But one of the things it does very well is, boy, adding to your lists or purchasing things or whatever. And my feeling is that really I don't see it them charging $20 a month or $10 a month or whatever for it. I see them as providing more tools to get you to use more Alexa more often and perhaps suggest more products or gather more information about products to suggest you. I mean, that seems like a gold mine there. Let you use their product for free, and then it can mine that information and say, boy, you've been talking a lot about coffee. May I suggest this coffee maker to you? And, you know, even if you just go to your Amazon.com homepage, and that's just at the top.
Sure.
You know, and it got that information, that insider information about you because you happen to be using the AI to ask about that. So I have a hard time thinking. It's great to see that they are working on it, I guess. Competition is better. There's even a name. They apparently, at least in-house, call it Titan. And everybody's got these internal names for their projects and stuff. So Amazon's has called theirs Titan. So it does exist. They do have one. We'll see if it actually makes an appearance on your Alexa device at some point.
I will say that if they're going to charge $20 a month, it's a failure from the get-go.
Yeah.
I just don't see people paying that. I think it's another wonderful thing to bundle in with Prime. Because I think, you know, it's an additional checkbox to make Prime that much more lucrative. And I think you're right. I think that, you know, they have an opportunity to leverage this in ways that are better for the company. The problem, I don't know if this is true for Amazon internally. It was true at times at Microsoft. And that is simply that companies, of course, are divided into various divisions. And they go through periods, or at least Microsoft went through periods, where every division was responsible for its bottom line. Meaning that if your division didn't turn a profit, then there was something wrong.
Yeah.
And that made things like you know, groups that focused on internal tools, things that were not sold, but things that were used internally in the company to make everybody else more effective, did not do well just because, well, we're a net negative, right? We're a cost, not, you know, we're an expense rather than a revenue source. And I wonder sometimes about Amazon's Echo, just because, yeah, they sell hardware, but you know that the hardware does not cover the cost of, say, something like a large model AI. And if they're using it as a way to increase overall sales or just increase customer relationship, then I'm hoping that they're not doing it the same way by taking a look at the bottom line, because I'm sure the bottom line is not going to be very good.
Yeah. Yep. So got that. I did want to bring up an interesting thing. I think I've mentioned this before, and I have talked about the fact that I have a little tool I made to help me see when my site is under attack.
Okay.
An attack being just basically some server out there just trying to like poke around, you know, is this admin page there? Is this little exploit available? That kind of thing.
Yes.
And I could see it as like all of a sudden some IP address is like hitting my server 1,000 times or whatever in a minute. So it's not a legitimate user. I have noticed over the years that these kinds of attacks happen on holiday weekends.
Yep.
And especially the Friday night, like Friday night before the Memorial Day holiday or
right.
the Labor Day holiday or before Christmas or something like that. I've noticed that. And it's interesting that it always seems to I know it's coming and it comes. The last couple of weeks, I've noticed hardly any traffic, any, error pages or anything like that. It's been very quiet. And then Friday night evening, around 6-7 o'clock at night, there it came, and it was all the way through Monday,
right?
In little waves. And it's like, yeah, it's trying to hit sites when it, you know, they think that the administrators would be away from their computers on vacation, that kind of
thing.
At most, I just want to bring it up because most people, I think, that don't have servers, or whatever, don't realize that that's the kind of thing that is out there that happens.
I think a lot of people don't realize that the phrase I use is we are all under constant attack. And I mean that quite literally.
Yeah.
Every server, every service, there's constantly something trying to poke its way in.
Yeah.
And the same is true for everything connected to the internet. Every machine, every router, everything is getting poked at by somebody.
Yeah. It's just funny that you think it's like nameless, faceless bots and stuff, but somebody is actually saying, you know, Friday night before Memorial Day weekend, I bet you we can maybe get away with some more than we usually do.
Yep.
Another interesting news story I want to bring up because it's kind of timely and I think it's hilarious, is that this week two huge tech giants merged. One bought the other. Massive names. At least it would have been 45 years ago.
Yes.
If 45 years ago you saw the headline, Atari buys Intellivision, it would have not only made the top tech news, not that tech news existed back then,
right.
But, you know, Walter Cronkite would have reported it at the top of the hour as the top thing. But it finally did happen this last week. Of course, both companies are nothing more than, the holders of intellectual property. They haven't, either one of them hasn't produced anything in a long time. They both have been passed around a lot.
Right.
Original owners many times removed.
Right.
But the company that owns brands such as Atari actually added Intellivision to their arsenal of brands. And the two brands are finally under one umbrella. Not that it matters, but it still was a funny headline to see and brought back lots of memories of playing both consoles back in the day.
And I have never, ever played either of them.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yep. I am an old gaming console Luddite. I never managed to play with it. So I have my Apple II, and then I went directly to other things.
You would not be impressed today by what you found. You have to be, I think, to be impressed by some of the Atari 2600 games, you had to play the earlier ones. Like if you started off with the games that came with it when it first came out, and then later on you went to see games like, say, Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever on it, you would be like, wow, I can't believe they were actually able to get this much gameplay into an Atari cartridge. But then today you look at it and say, what? Yeah.
Your headline just made me, I wanted to mention this because I'm not sure I quite understand it. The headline I ran into this morning was that T-Mobile buys U.S. Cellular. So yeah. Two phone companies coming together. I was under the impression that at least in the United States, the actual physical networks were controlled by three companies, T-Mobile and Verizon and AT&T.
Yeah.
But and that I thought U.S. Cellular, to the extent that they were a phone company, were really just resellers of one of those networks that they were, had a contract with one of those providers, since there's a lot of third party, or I don't know if you would call them fourth party cellular providers that are really just reselling.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Tons of
on existing networks. But in reading the article on it, it seems that U.S. Cellular also owns some frequencies, which implies they have some hardware. So it's maybe a little bit more significant merger than I thought. T-Mobile is, of course, claiming that it's wonderful, it's more coverage, faster, better, smaller, all that kind of stuff. But I just thought it was interesting. I did not realize that there was another significant player other than the top three.
Okay, cool.
So, ain't it cool? So we ended up watching on Netflix a movie called Atlas. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay. It's new. It came out this year. It is Jennifer Lopez. And the reason that it just sort of cracks me up is that it is all about an AI uprising. It's very much got some Terminator vibes to it. And indeed, they start off with, the war between the AI and the humans, and, AI end up leaving the planet going off. And the movie's basically all about tracking down the main AI, the guy that's apparently running it all. But I just thought it was interesting that, in this era right now of so much discussion about AI, I'm wondering if we're going to see a few more AI apocalypse type productions coming out, just because everybody seems to be talking about AI in one form or another.
Well, if the movie company is having trouble writing scripts, I could suggest a technique that will allow them to write the scripts very quickly.
I will say, the movie's not Oscar material by any stretch. I don't bring it up because it's, just this wonderful, great movie. There are definitely some neat aspects to it, a little bit of humor stuck in from time to time. J-Lo did okay. But just the fact that it was some interesting timing on the AI apocalypse made me think it was a kind of a cool thing.
Cool. I 2 weeks ago, I think I did use Doctor Who as my Ain't It Cool. And I'm going to do it again, because the strange thing is that it was the first two new episodes of the whole new season, new Doctor and everything like that. And I said, yeah, it's okay. If you like Doctor Who, it's nice to have new episodes. Well, the two episodes after three and four of the season turned out to be some of the best episodes of Doctor Who for years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one called Boom, which at the it's just a I don't want to give any spoilers away, so I won't say anything, but great episode, very sci-fi. Like, if you're a sci-fi fan and you like the kind of things that you read in sci-fi books, it's like, this is like, oh yeah, a really good script. And then the second episode, 73 Yards, which is just a really interesting, thought-provoking episode that I have seen. Doctor Who fans are talking more about this episode than any episode I've, for years now.
Right.
People talking online about it. So it's just great. It was like all of a sudden, I would be one of the many people saying, 2 weeks ago, it's like, yeah, current Doctor was okay. I just wish the scripts were better. And then all of a sudden to be delivered two episodes in a row where I have to say the scripts were excellent. So
73 Yards. We just watched that. It came out last Friday, didn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's the most recent one, yeah.
And the thing that I thought was interesting about it, again, without giving too much away, is that Doctor Who is actually not in it that much.
Yeah, and that's right. Which is something I know other TV shows hate that. Well, we know through like a mutual friend that like a show like, for instance, Star Trek, any of the Star Treks, they hate it when a script comes in and it's a good script, but it doesn't include enough of the main characters, right? It's all about bringing those main characters forward. So it's always interesting to see a show when they sometimes some shows will pull a side character out and say, this episode's about them, or they'll take the main character out and say, they're just not going to be in this one. And it was really interesting to see Doctor Who do that. It's happened before, but I love it when a show, to me goes and says they'll put the show above trying to, make their main character some sort of superhero or whatever and say, yeah, the story just doesn't call for them. So anyway, yeah, great episode.
Yep, I agree for both of those. Let's see. So blatant self-promotion. Well, I already talked about my Google article. I think I mentioned that actually last week. So this week, it was my time to reformat and reinstall. It's askleo.com/170574. Basically, in the Windows world for decades, it's always been a kind of an assumption that especially for higher end users or more active users, you end up having to just sort of say every once in a while, it's time to nuke the machine and reinstall Windows from scratch. I had not done that on this machine yet. It's a 4-year-old, a little over 4-year-old machine. And it started out as Windows 10. It upgraded to Windows 11. It's got all the updates, but it also has suffered from a lot of, installs, test the software, uninstall it, do this, do that, leaves a lot of cruft on the machine. So I did that. I went through the process of reinstalling this machine from scratch and then only installing the software that I actually missed, that I actually wanted to use. And my big surprise was, holy crap, do I use a lot of software? I spent a lot of time installing stuff. It's all stuff that I like, all stuff that's, I use every day almost, but it just surprised me how much stuff there really was. So anyway, if you're interested in that kind of little bit of behind the scenes, it was my time to reformat and reinstall.
Cool. I did a video, a kind of important one on stolen iPhone messaging scams. This is the type of scam you get when you've actually lost your iPhone or it's been stolen. And one of the ways to recover it is to hopefully have somebody call you or text you, with the number you put on the phone. You can actually put it into lost mode and put a little contact number and all that. And everybody should do that because it is actually more likely that somebody may have found the phone, and want to get it back to you than you would be scammed. But the scam works as the person takes that phone number and then contacts you claiming to be either from Apple or from your mobile provider or from the police or from somebody else like that. Or more likely, they just tell you right off the bat, I have your stolen iPhone. It's mine. I'm in China or whatever, and I've received it. And here's what you need to do because I could see all your contacts. I could see all your data. I could get to all your stuff. You need to go in and disassociate yourself with this phone to protect yourself. I'm going to help you out. And of course, it's a scam. They can't see any of your stuff. What they want you to do is to disassociate yourself with your phone so they can resell it. Because if you don't do that, the phone's useless to them. They are going to have to sell it for parts. But if you do go in and do it, fall for the scam, then they can actually reformat the phone. It's kind of like you would be then doing the same sequence you would do if you would sell it to somebody legitimately.
Can you, in
So.
a situation like that, do you have the option to brick it remotely?
Oh, yes, and that's exactly what you should do. And you have the option. First, you put it into lost mode. The next thing you do is you can erase it. So if you're worried about your data on there, it's encrypted. They can't get to it. But if you don't even want to, if they somehow got your password, you realize you wrote it on a piece of paper and stuck it on the back or something, you could actually erase it so that your data is gone, but yet it is still your phone.
Right.
At that point. And you could still, if you recovered it, if you found it, oh, it was under the car seat, you know, you could then, you know, recover it and put your stuff back on it. But you could also go and say, no, brick it, kill it forever, and do that. And that's what you should do. But you should definitely not do the thing saying, yeah, I take remove this from my Apple ID. That's the thing you do if you're like, you give it to your younger sibling. And
right.
they can make it their own phone, or you sold it, or you just took it to a recycler, you know, you take it to Apple and say recycle. Oh yeah. And then you remove it from your thing. That's, but if somebody stole it from you, yeah, they're trying to trick you into getting you to do that. I explained that in the video. Anyway.
Excellent. Yep. Good warning.
Yep.
All righty. Well, I think that once again does us for another week.
Yep.
Just a reminder for everybody that, you know, you can find Gary out at macmost.com and you can find me at askleo.com. That's where we spend our days and parts of our nights and sometimes sleepless nights at that.
Yeah.
As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you here again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/TEH222. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.